Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. It is Wednesday, March 6th. My name is Rob Dosser. I have a fun conversation on the way for you. Today I was able to catch up with my buddy from The Athletic, the one guy that you need to talk to about Kansas basketball, Mr. CJ Moore. And we had a nice long chat about what the end of the Kansas Big 12 title streak means, what it means for the Jayhawks, what it means for Bruce Weber and Kansas State, what it means for Chris Beard and Texas Tech, just what is going to happen with the Big 12 moving forward. We also had a little bit of time to talk about Zion, Duke, and the fact that we have not seen those two things together. We talked about the Big 10 title race, and we got into some of our favorite memories from conference championship week. And that is what I need to ask from you guys. I have been racking my brain trying to come up with the best memories from conference tournament week and championship week. So I want you guys in the comments to let me know what your favorite moment is from the madness before the madness. For me, as you'll hear later on, there are two. One is Ray Allen hitting the floater to beat Georgetown in the 1996 Big East title game. And when it comes to mid-majors, I think it is probably Peter Hooley of Albany making that ridiculous buzzer beater to send Albany to the NCAA tournament less than a month after his mom passed away from cancer. So I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys have to share with me, because I love nothing more than reminiscing about our favorite March Madness moments. So if you could do that, I would really appreciate it. And now let's get into that conversation with CJ Moore. And now let me welcome on to the podcast a frequent guest and our resident Kansas expert from The Athletic, one Mr. CJ Moore. He is currently in the car driving on his way to Kansas State, presumably to find out whether or not they can actually go out and win a Big 12 regular season title. CJ, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Oh, just driving across beautiful I-70. Doing well. How are you, Rob?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I feel like every time that I talk to you, you're actually on this drive. It's almost like you use me as a way to make that drive go quicker. I don't know why you would want to talk to me while you're driving. That seems pretty miserable.
Yeah, I couldn't find anybody else to talk to me this afternoon. Everybody else is working. So I thought, I'll call Rob, see if he wants to podcast a little bit.
Well, I appreciate it, man. We definitely have plenty to talk about your Jayhawks. Seeing as they lost last night to Oklahoma in pretty ugly fashion, which sealed their fate as not going to be a team that wins the Big 12 regular season title for the first time in 14 years. So let me just start you off with this. When was the moment when you finally sat there and said, okay, it's done, it's not happening, they are not going to win the Big 12? Because for me, it was when I looked up at the score. After the Florida State game ended last night, and after Duke finally found a way to beat Wake Forest, I looked up, I turn on the channel, I go to ESPN2, I put on Kansas-Oklahoma, and it's 23-7. And I'm like, well, that's it. This is actually happening. When was that moment for you?
Honestly, I felt like when they went to Iowa State and lost to Iowa State, just the way the season had played out to that point, and having watched them enough, I was feeling at that point like I think this was the team that was going to end it. And that feeling has just kind of gotten stronger as the season has progressed. I was fairly confident this would be the one. I just, in terms of how good they were, and some of the struggles they were having, and then you put the injuries of Udoka on top of it. I just felt like I know you're not supposed to bet against Bill Self, yada yada yada, but like I've watched Kansas pretty much all my life, dating back to like 1990, born in '84. So I've watched a lot of Kansas teams. I feel like I have a pretty good idea kind of how they stack up. And, this was one that just, it didn't feel like they would be able to, be consistent enough to win a Big 12 title.
And when you look at it in the big picture, it feels like it shouldn't really be that surprising that this is the way that it kind of unfolded. By the time we got to last night, this was a Kansas team that was basically trying to make themselves over for the second time within the span like the last 2 months. They were starting four freshmen. One of those freshmen was supposed to be the third string center. One of those freshmen was supposed to be a redshirt this year. And one of those freshmen had been in a funk and was playing with the confidence of an eighth grader trying to ask his crush out to the spring formal. So it's not like this was... we thought Kansas was going to be one of the the older and deeper and more talented teams in college basketball. By the time we looked up in March, you know, this was a team that has, maybe one NBA player on it, maybe two, and the best prospect might actually be the guy that didn't play the first 15 games because he was going to redshirt.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll ultimately probably have, maybe three eventually. But, yeah, the talent's not what you're usually seeing. Kansas is – Bill Self's teams have found a way to stay relatively old. Thinking back through the years, to me, the only teams that were, super young during this streak were the 2006 team that had, the Chalmers, Brandon Rush, Julian Wright, their freshman year. That team was really young, played a lot of freshmen and sophomores, but, those were dudes that went on to win a national championship, and those were some bad dudes, right?
Yeah, they were.
So you got that group, and then in 2014 they were really young, but they had Joel Embiid, who's arguably the best center in basketball right now, and Andrew Wiggins, who was the number one overall pick, and then a good young sophomore Perry Ellis, and Frank Mason goes on to win National Player of the Year. That's decent freshman. Wayne Selton, decent freshman. That team was really young and probably one of the worst teams of the streak years, but just super talented. So, this was a bad combination of you got a lot younger when you lost Udoka and a lot less, a lot more inexperienced. And then the talent just maybe isn't what you've seen in some other years for Bill Self teams.
I think the most impressive thing about this and about this Bill Self run that he's been on in these 14 straight years is we've had years where Kansas, maybe not quite to this level, but there's been years where a lot of things went wrong for them. Remember when their recruiting class, they brought in two five-stars and it was Sheck Diallo who missed a whole bunch of games because of some NCAA stuff and then never really found his rhythm. And Carlton Bragg, who, who knows where he is, right? I think he's playing for New Mexico or something like that. And those were the two five-star freshmen that he brought in. They had the whole Cliff Alexander disaster. Joel Embiid didn't play, the last eight or nine games in 2014 when he got hurt. So I think the most impressive thing, and maybe the most incredible thing about this run, is that this is the first time where all of this stuff went wrong. And with all of this stuff that went wrong, and we can kind of go through that a little bit, they still, if they win at home on Saturday, they're going to go 12-6 in the conference, which is pretty good in a league that is as good as the Big 12 is. So I still think that this was a pretty impressive season from Kansas, considering everything that went wrong. And to me, it really shows you just how much Kansas has been able to accomplish over the course of this 14-year run.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the perspective I tried to put out there on Twitter last night. Was okay, this every coach is due a down year every once in a while. And Bill Self, for the first time in 15 years, isn't going to win the league, and he's going to finish third in his down year. Most likely to finish third. So in his down year. So that's impressive. I guess they're locked into third at this point, right?
Yeah, I think so.
That's pretty nuts that this is their down year, and for this team to still have a chance to go undefeated at home, it's just kind of nuts that they were even in position with a week left to have a shot at it. I'll be honest, I didn't even think they'd be as close as they were. Kind of early mid conference season, I wasn't sure they could stay as close and have a shot with a week left. And you say reinventing themselves once or twice, Bill Self had to do more tweaking this year and like stylistic changes than I think any team he's had probably at Kansas.
Well, I mean, it's really incredible when you think about it, right? Because they built this team around the idea that they were going to run everything through Doak. Like, we saw that through, what, the first five, six, seven, eight games, whatever it was that he played. Like, they were just throwing the ball into him, throwing the ball into him, throwing the ball into him. And their whole, like, the high-low game and the big-to-big screening action that they had with Dedrick Lawson and Udoka Azubuike, like, that was – they were running some really good stuff. And you know, they got buoyed a little bit by the fact that Gerald Vick, like, went absolutely bonkers in some games where they weren't quite figuring it all out. But there was like some real promise with that team when you have guys as good as some of the Kansas guys around somebody as dominant in the post as Udoka Azubuike is. But then when he went away, when he broke up, was it like he tore a tendon in his wrist? All of a sudden, they tried to go like with this full small ball movement again, where they're playing four guys around Dedrick Lawson. And that worked to had varying degrees of success, but it looked like they were kind of starting to figure it out. Before Marcus Garrett went down for an ankle injury that kept him out for, what, like 3 weeks? And Gerald Vick suddenly disappeared for some reason. So they had to reinvent themselves again. And this time it involved using Oshai Agbaji, who is a kid that was supposed to be a redshirt, and David McCormick, who was supposed to be their third string center coming in to the season. So it's just... when you think about how many changes that Kansas team has had to make throughout the year in terms of what the rotation is, in terms of who's playing what minutes, in terms of how they're supposed to play on the floor, it really is remarkable that he was able, that Bill Self was able to do what he's done this season.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, like the Dedrick Lawson, like small ball lineup was their change up early in the year. Like there were games where Udoka was going to have a hard time, you know, maybe staying on the floor for certain matchups or something like that. Like, you go back to the first time they played Oklahoma. They were struggling that night with Udoka, and they go small, and they come back and win that game. So, like, the you know, that was basically Self's changeup, and he had to make that his fastball, right? Like, so it's I think the loss of Udoka was really, really big on both ends, too. He made them better defensively, because he actually gave them some rim protection. And then, you know, when this team was going to have lapses where they couldn't score just because the shooting wasn't what it's been recently, but you always had Udoka was probably going to get a couple, putbacks during that stretch. And if you could just get him the ball within a couple feet, like, it was over. Like, you know, he's scoring that or he's getting fouled. So I think Udoka in a way was like kind of their fallback plan for when things didn't go well, where you still got that huge guy in the middle that's just gonna, you know, gobble up some rebounds, gobble up some points when all else fails. And, you know, losing that was definitely a big blow. And but, you know, I'm not positive that even if Udoka's healthy, they end up winning the league. They might have. It probably would have played out a little differently, but you know, I don't know that you can entirely just use that as the excuse and say, you know, if he stays healthy, they win the league. They might have, but they might not have, too.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason that they're not going to win the league is, like, they lost at West Virginia. You know, I don't know how much Udoka Azubuike is going to change things when you go into West Virginia and you lose that basketball game. Now,
you can't handle the ball at all.
Yeah, like, he's not going to be the guy bringing the ball up. Now, that said, part of the reason they lost is because down the stretch, if I'm remembering correctly, they were up by six with like 90 seconds left and just ran four horrible, horrible, horrible offensive possessions in a row where they just kind of like it ended with Dedrick Lawson like driving into three people or Gerald Vick throwing up one of those like 22 footers where he fires it off balance and it you just kind of pray that like that's the shot that actually goes in instead of being the shot that misses. And if you have Doak out there, things are a little bit differently and a little bit different in terms of what you can do in that situation. But like when you go 3-8 on the road for the season in true road games, like you really can't complain about you know too much. I wonder how much of that changes if you like, because he's almost like a set, like it's a pressure release, right? When you have a big guy, you can just kind of throw the ball into. You know, if guards are climbing all over you, it's something that kind of takes away from that. And it actually gets that's another point that I want to talk about. Like, you've probably been to Fog Allen Fieldhouse more than anybody that covers college basketball, at least that I talk to. So just talk to me a little bit about what that home court advantage is like and how much you think that home court advantage has played into the fact that they, like, this streak lasted as long as it did. Like, if they didn't quite have, let me phrase it like this. How much does that raise the level of what this Kansas team can be year in and year out?
Some years, I don't know that it matters as much, because some years they, you know, some of those years they were just like really, 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 really good teams. And if you look at like the first half of the streak, their road record was really, really, really good. You know, and then there's some other years recently where it was pretty good. There's some years in the back half of it where the road record wasn't that good, and, like, you know, the home court advantage was where they won it. But, you know, with this team in particular, I think, you know, just the energy level that they play with is so much different at home. And it's just the place is juice, like, every time out, and for the most part. And it just gives it year in and year out, gives those guys the confidence that, like, they can do anything. Like, Bill Self, when we were, Jason King and I were doing our book, like, we were talking about, like, different guys that, like, just because they, not just Allen Fieldhouse, but, like, you get in that Kansas uniform and you just, like, feel like a rock star and, like, you can achieve anything. Like, guys like Kevin Young, you know, like, become really, really valuable players where, like, you know, Kevin Young started his career at, where was it? Like, Louisville, Marymount, maybe. So that really helps, you know. And you go back to games like, you know, one of the games they had against West Virginia where, like, looked like they were, going to lose, and then they make a miraculous comeback in the end a few years ago. You got the Missouri game in 2012 where they're down 19, I believe, and come back to win that one against, like, a really, 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 really good Missouri team. It just kind of gives Kansas confidence that, like, those guys can achieve basically anything in that building.
Yeah, and it just, when it gets that loud, it's always hard for teams to kind of come in and but I call it a cauldron, and that's really what it ends up being. You know, it's kind of like, you know, Duke has the same thing going on, and there's a lot of programs that have just absolutely phenomenal, like VCU for years when they were, like, when their band was really rolling and they had the Havoc thing going on, like, that place would get rocking, and it was always a nightmare to go in and try to play. You know, especially when you're running, when your coach is trying to tell you, like, what you want to run or changes you want to make defensively, and you just can't hear him, even though he's standing 15 feet away from you. So,
go pop in the tape of the Kansas State game from, what was it, a week or 2 weeks ago? I guess it was just a week ago. And did you watch that game, Rob?
Yes, I did.
Did you notice, like, how much Kansas State just was, like, holding the ball near half court, like, in a bunch of their possessions in that game?
Yeah.
And it's basically because, like, Bruce Weber was trying to communicate to his guys and, like, orchestrate from the sideline where he wanted guys to go, and, like, nobody could hear anything. So, I mean, it takes away an opposing coach's ability to, like, make adjustments from the sideline because it's just so dang loud. So, yeah, the point you make of the noise. Like, there's multiple levels of why Allen Fieldhouse is such a tough place to play. And, you know, the noise can really factor in, because if you're trying to coach from the sideline, like, good luck. I don't even know sometimes how guys hear during timeouts, like during media timeouts. Like, that place can even get really, really loud then when they're pumping the music. Like, it's hard enough talking to the person next to you. It's got to be tough sometimes, communicating in your huddle.
Yeah, that's actually a good question. Like, you probably should ask the players about that someday. Just, you know, when Bill Self has you in those huddles and everyone's going nuts, like, what are you actually listening to him, and how is he actually communicating? Is he just, instead of drawing up plays on the whiteboard, is he writing out what he wants you guys to know? Does he have a cell phone where he can kind of put it into his notes app and then show you so everybody can read it and pass around the phone? That's a pretty interesting question. Last thing before we kind of move off of just the Jayhawks. Where do you think that this – well, first, let me start with this. Like, what do Kansas fans think about the streak and kind of what what it means and the identity of the Kansas program when it comes to, like, oh, we never lose the Big 12. And where do you think that this kind of achievement stands in the pantheon of college basketball history? Because for my money, since I've been paying attention to the sport, which probably dates back to like the early to mid 90s, I cannot think of anything that is more impressive than this amount of sustained success and this amount of longevity that one program can have over a conference that I don't think the Big 12 was always the best conference, especially when they had it was like two divisions and Kansas was always in a little bit of a weaker division, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So especially at that time, but we're talking about a power conference here. To be able to do all of this without having one single down year where you had the bad luck of like one guy flunking off and one guy tearing an ACL or whatever it is, to be able to do that for 14 straight years is just absolutely absurd.
Yeah, to me, as far as regular season accomplishments, and, you know, a lot of people will maybe poo-poo it because KU only won one national title during that streak. And, you know, Kansas probably should have won at least one more over these last, you know, 14, 15 years. I'd agree with that. But it's harder to win your league year in and year out than it is to, like, go win a national title as far as the longevity of it. So, yeah, to me it's the most impressive thing anybody's done in college basketball, you know, in our basically basketball lifetimes. And what was your first part of the question? Remind me, Rob.
Just like how
Kansas fans see it.
Yeah,
I think they've developed a perspective. You know, I think that there's like been stages of the grief this year where it's like, oh, this is the team that won't do it. Like, what's wrong with these guys? Where I hope most of them are getting the point where they're like, okay, let's have some perspective. Like, you don't just win a league every year. And to have this streak go on as long as it has, like, it's pretty incredible. And I think there's disappointment just because there was so much pride in the fact that it continued to go on as long as it did. So I think, you know, a lot of KU fans, you know, fans are fans. So there's going to be a lot of fans that are, like, delusional and don't have much perspective because that's just kind of how being a fan is sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think a decent number of them are realizing that, like, this is a pretty incredible accomplishment. And I go back to the Roy, like, Roy was incredibly consistent in Kansas. Like, he had one little stretch in the late 90s, right before he got the Collison, Gooden, Heinrich class, where, like, they had about an in-between Pierce and the friends leaving to, like, 99, 2000. Like, basically the 99, 2000 years were down years. But, like, other than that, and then his first year at Kansas, other than that, like, he was incredibly consistent. And, you know, they just put out winner after winner after winner. And there was – when Roy left, there was a, you know, sentiment among the fan base, I think, of, like, oh, my gosh. Like, what are they going to do now? Like, they can't – there's no way they can find another Roy. So, you know, following – for Self to, like, have to follow that, and for him to have the success he's had is pretty unreal, because there were a lot of Kansas fans freaking out when Roy left. And you know, Self's run over these years has actually been better than what Roy did in his time at Kansas, which was ridiculously freaking good.
How are people going to end up looking at these players, right? Like, they got to walk around with the scarlet letter being like, because these are five newcomers, basically, that are starting right now. And they got to walk around with the scarlet letter being like, hey, we're the ones that ended the streak. Like, are they still allowed to come back after they leave? Like, are they going to be invited to all the Kansas parties?
They better start a new one, right? They better, like, leave with, yeah, I think they'll be fine. You know, I think Self does a pretty good job of keeping it in perspective for his guys and not putting too much pressure on, like, this particular team when it comes to it. And I mean, not to make excuses for this group, but, like, if you go back through the years and, like, look at really, really young teams recently in college basketball, like, the ones that end up winning their league are ones that have, like, just a freakish – one or two freakish talents that are freshmen, right? Like, you look at your Anthony Davis team at Kentucky. You know, if Duke would have won the ACC this year, it would have been with a healthy Zion, and you would have had like a generational talent in Zion, right? But like when you don't have, I think, that elite, and then, you know, like we talk about 2014 Kansas, that Embiid and Wiggins, like to be young and win a league, win a Power Five league is really, really hard. And I've thought a lot about that this year, that like, you know, once they lost Udoka, it basically became a pretty young team. And LeGerald Vick was their one senior who's like not your typical senior.
You don't want him to be your one senior.
Yeah, you don't want him to be your one senior. Like, it's not surprising that, like, when LeGerald Vick left, the mood level and the spirit of that team got better. So, you know, my larger point is basically, like, it's really, really hard, I think, to win a Power Five league when you have a really young roster and you don't just have like a freak stud guy on your team.
Yeah, these freshmen basically did what freshmen were supposed to do. Let me ask you about Kansas State, because I know that you are the leader of the Bruce Weber fan club, and I don't know if you're allowed to do that as somebody that grew up not a Kansas State fan. So what do you make of him being the guy to end the streak, assuming that they're able to, what do they have, Oklahoma at home? Saturday. So if they're able to beat Oklahoma at home on Saturday, it is Bruce Weber, Kansas rival, the guy that Kansas State fans tried to fire like 9 different times over the course of the last 3 years, that ends this streak a year after he got into the Elite Eight. Do you think Kansas State fans are ready to apologize to Bruce Weber yet?
I think they're coming around. I actually last night.
they're only now coming around. Coming off an Elite Eight, and he's one win away.
There's a Fire Bruce hashtag that was going around for a few years, you know. And I actually, for fun last night, just like went to see if those people are still talking. And there's a handful. There's like one or two that are still tweeting it out. but yeah, like for him to do it. Pretty amazing accomplishment for that guy. And that, you know, you have to remember too, his first year at K-State, he won the league, you know, tied with Kansas. So now he's won 2 Big 12, if they finish it off on Saturday. If they're able to do it, he'll have won 2 Big 12 championships, you know, league titles in his time at K-State. Like, the dude's a pretty good coach. Like, that's always my point, is like he probably is, not probably, he definitely doesn't get enough love. I think Bruce Weber's a pretty good basketball coach, and has probably not gotten the credit he deserves. And you know what's K-State? They're really old. Like, what's Texas Tech? Pretty dang old. It helps to have experienced teams, and you know, Bruce has built it up pretty good.
What is, like, how do you feel about Kansas State versus Texas Tech? Like, where are you? Who's better? Who has a better chance to make a run in March? Like, where are you in that debate?
I think they're kind of similar teams in that, like, they're both really, really mentally tough, and they just kind of grind you down and wear you out over the course of 40 minutes. Now, the way Texas Tech has been shooting the ball lately, I think they've probably got a shot, a little bit better shot to get to a Final Four because of that potential to, like, get hot and shoot the ball from the perimeter and then, you know, have that defense as well. Like, they both have elite defensive teams, but Texas Tech's offensive ceiling's a little higher. So I think Tech's probably got a little bit better chance, but, you know, I think K-State's tournament success last year and returning a lot of those guys will definitely help in the NCAA tournament, just knowing they've been through it. They've been through that. You know, they know how to handle the attention of it. That'll definitely help. And, you know, Texas Tech went on the run last year too, but it's really a new team kind of for the Red Raiders.
Yeah. And before people hop in our mentions and hop in the comments, yes, Texas Tech made the Elite Eight too. But they have 6 of their 8 players are newcomers. I think Jarrett Culver and Brandon Francis are the 2 returnees. Maybe Narenze Odiasi too.
Moretti too.
Moretti, yeah.
He didn't play a ton.
But they lost a lot of like their their bet, like Keenan Evans is gone, Zaire Smith is gone. And so, yes, we know Texas Tech made that run too. But the difference is that Kansas State basically returned everybody while Texas Tech did not. I mostly fall in line with your take there. I do have to admit that, like, I've been on the Texas Tech bandwagon. I was on them very early in the season. Then they lost three in a row, and Jarrett Culver forgot how to shoot, and I had to hop off the bandwagon for, like, 2 weeks.
Nobody could shoot.
It was bad.
Nobody could shoot for a while there. Yeah. I've got a take there, too, if you want to go into them a little bit.
Yeah, let's go. Talk to me.
You know, I think when going through those struggles that they went a little too heavy on trying to ride Culver and, like, just putting him in a bunch of ball screen stuff and letting him create, and got a little bit too much away from their motion. And it was almost kind of like a Trey Young thing with Oklahoma last year, where it's hard for everybody else to be in a rhythm when one guy's dominating the ball so much. So I think once they went to more of it, you know, kind of went back to being involved a little bit more, that's been, you know, one reason why their offense is kind of kicked it back into gear. And you know, there's not so much pressure on Culver, and, you know, everybody is getting in rhythm, where there was just a lot put on his plate kind of during that stretch where they were struggling. And I understand why, because it's like, okay, nobody else is making shots. Let's just put him in some ball screens and let him go create, because he's a lottery pick.
Yeah, so how's this going to play out? Do you think Kansas State is going to get – are they going to hold serve at home against Oklahoma? And is Texas Tech going to go in and pick off Iowa State on the road? What are we going to have on the final day of the regular season on Saturday evening? Who is going to be the Big 12 champion?
Well, I think K-State should hold serve at home. You know, it'll be an emotional senior night for those guys. And Oklahoma did just play really, really well. But I think K-State will hold serve at home. I think the Iowa State Texas Tech game's probably kind of like a coin flip, but I'm going to lean Texas Tech just because I think those guys have so much pride in the fact that Iowa State got them in Lubbock. And you know, Iowa State's already lost. Hilton this year hasn't been what it usually is. Like, Iowa State's lost, I believe, 3 home games this season.
Yeah, Hilton Magic's been on the road this season.
Yeah, I went back and looked, like, during the Hoiberg from years, at least once Hoiberg got it rolling, they hadn't lost more than 2 home games in a year. So that's kind of unusual. So I'm going to probably lean Tech in that game, but that one's more of a coin flip to me. Don't you think, Rob?
Yeah, but I will note that Iowa State has lost 4 of their last 6. They do play tonight at West Virginia. I'm assuming they're going to end up getting that win. But they've lost 4 of their last 6. I think Nick Weiler-Babb, is he banged up? Someone's banged up, and I think Cam Lahr didn't make their last road trip. So it's
yeah, I think there's some team turmoil maybe going on there. And, I taking Lahr, I think probably the guy that has hurt them by not being what he could be is probably Lard, because if you look at a lot of their losses, it's the teams that are pretty big up front and can just crush you on the boards, like a Baylor, for instance. You know, I think Iowa State has struggled because they don't really have, like, a true big guy who can kind of protect, you know, who can rim protect and rebound, and that's what Lard should have been for them, and he's just been kind of in and out of the lineup because of stuff he's got going on. So
stuff he's got going on. That's one way to put it.
I'm still, like, I think Iowa State could still end up being a team to go on a run in March. Like, I've been really high on their talent all year. I just think that they've probably dealt with more in-house and, you know, balancing egos and that kind of stuff than some of the other teams have had to deal with.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm also here for I really want Texas Tech Kansas State Part 3 in the Big 12 title game. I think that would be fantastic. I love both the way that both those teams play. I love the toughness, all of that. So I'm 100% here for Texas Tech.
For a 58-56 Big 12 final.
Yeah, man. Look, make a lot of money betting those unders.
No, it would be fun. Man. Those guys, both teams really, really, really play hard, and you have to appreciate that. And those teams are just grind you down, get after it. teams and very, very good defensive scouting teams as far as, like, the coaches putting together defensive, you know, scouting reports. And, yeah, they're fun in a, like, basketball purist kind of way, people who, like, appreciate that kind of stuff. If you like a lot of points being put up and want to see all that, you know, sometimes Texas Tech will give that to you, but you might not always love watching those games.
So let's change gears a little bit. You mentioned Zion Williamson and his absence earlier, and I'm just kind of curious. Like, so last night they probably played their worst performance or their worst game of the season. They won by 1 point at home against a bad Wake Forest team with a head coach that might end up getting fired by the end of the ACC tournament. And the only reason they won is because a layup at the buzzer happened to roll one way off the rim, the same way that Grayson Allen's shot at the end of the Elite Eight in 2018 rolled off the rim in the wrong direction. It was not pretty. Cam Reddish was not good. RJ Barrett was, I mean, he was fine, but he wasn't as good as he's been over the course of, like, the last three or four games. It was just an ugly, ugly performance from a team that looks like they are just treading water until they get Zion Williamson back. Now, Coach K came out and said last night after the game that he does not think that they're going to have Zion Williamson ready for Saturday's showdown with North Carolina at North Carolina, and that he thinks that there's a chance they can get him back for the ACC tournament. So just let me ask you this, CJ. What do you think Duke's ceiling is without Zion? And are we talking about a team that, like, could end up losing in the first weekend of the tournament, going from being, like, the best team in the country and the favorite number one, everyone going to pick them to win the national title, to you know, maybe being a team that could get upset by, like, a 14 seed? Or, you know, if Zion isn't there for the NCAA tournament, are we talking about a team that ends up being, like, a 4 seed or a 5 seed instead of a maybe a 2 seed with their floor?
I think it'd be hard for them to fall below, like, a 3. Don't you? I mean, even if they lose. So how many games they got left? They got Carolina and then
the ACC tournament.
But I'm just the ACC tournament. So even if they lost their next two, aren't they still either a 2 or 3 seed?
I mean, you would yes, if you know that Zion is coming back. If Zion doesn't come back,
yeah,
then
even if they're not, I don't think the committee would drop them below a 3.
Fair enough. But so, I guess what do you think their ceiling is without Zion?
Without Zion, I mean, I think he ultimately plays, but without him. Second weekend team is probably the ceiling. I don't think they could. I'm not sure they could get to a Final Four without him.
I don't think so either. They don't have.
I mean, they're just not a good shooting team. Freshmen become freshmen, kind of type of thing. Like, isn't that kind of what we're seeing with Duke? When you take Zion away, mm-hmm. You become freshmen a little bit. They're just not that juggernaut. And you know, not having the shooting is like. He can negate that a little bit because he's such a freak. And, like, you can't keep pace from the paint. But, you know, when he's not out there, teams can just – when they don't have Zion, teams can basically just sag off into the paint and make their shooters, you know, quote-unquote shooters, try to make shots. And they're a team that, what, is shooting like 30%, between 30 and 31% from three, right, Rob?
Yeah, it's low. It's not good.
It's not good. Like, I don't think you've never had a national title team that is this poor shooting team win it. It's very rare a team gets to the Final Four with this, you know, poor shooting to get to a Final Four. What Zion can negate that a little bit is because basically, like, he can get to the paint no matter how a defense is defending him because he's a freak. But you take him out of the picture, and, you know, teams are just going to make them shoot shots from the perimeter. And I don't think over the course of you know, 4 games in the tournament, they're going to have probably a couple off nights there, and I don't know if they can win on a couple off nights without Zion.
Well, the other part of it is that he is what makes their defense elite because of his ability to protect the rim, because of the steals that he gets, because of the presence that he has in the paint. You know, I talked about this on Monday, but teams – know when they get to the lane that Zion Williamson is there. I mean, you can see it when you watch the film Like, especially when the one that really sticks out in my mind was the Louisville game when they made that comeback. Louisville's guards would get in the paint, and they would have a floater where they had space, and you could see their eyes go on to Zion Williamson, and they would not take the shot that they had when they should have taken the shot, and they would pass it out. And it ended up being a turnover a couple times, and so his presence out there changes things. He is a playmaker defensively. Like, he forces turnovers. He forces you to make mistakes. When you get those turnovers, all of a sudden, you're going out in transition. They get 8, 10, 12 points a game off of just wide-open layups because they jump passing lanes and teams make mistakes. And that makes it easier for them offensively. He's able to get to the offensive glass because, you know, he's just such a freak of nature. And that gets you another, like, 4, 6, 8 points. So the things that he can do simply by being the freak of nature athlete that he is makes it so much easier for Duke to do things on the offensive end of the floor because they can miss shots, and that's still good offense for him because Zion can go get the ball. You know, they can make mistakes defensively, but it's still going to be a block because Zion Williamson is right there. You know, he can make his ability to take the pressure off of what they do in the half court is just so important to the way that Duke built their team that I don't think that they can recover without him. I think teams are starting to figure it out a little bit, and I'm with you, man. I would not be surprised to see them lose in the second round of the tournament. I don't think that they end up getting upset in the first round. I think they'll be just like the sheer talent of RJ Barrett and Cam Reddish will be enough to overtake whatever mid-major team they get in the first round. But I could see them having a lot of trouble. Like, there's some good 6 and 7 seeds out there, and I could see them having a little bit of trouble with that game. Let's talk a little bit about the Big Ten, because there is one thing that I want to bring up to you, and I need to get your thoughts on this, all right? So last night, Purdue lost at Minnesota, and it was a loss that ended up bringing both Michigan and Michigan State back into the Big Ten title picture. Michigan plays Michigan State on Sunday evening, I believe, or no, Saturday evening, and then Purdue still has to play at Northwestern. So anybody could end up winning the Big Ten regular season title. I think we're probably going to end up seeing two teams sharing it, but that's not necessarily what I want to talk about. What I want to talk about is something that happened at the end of the Purdue game. And a Minnesota fan, after they won the game, runs on the floor for the court storm and runs straight into Matt Harm's face and flips him the double bird, like, right in the dude's face. And here's my theory, CJ, because I'm curious what you have to say about this. I think that the best rule to have for a court storm is there's some idiot that does that to a player. That player is allowed one punch to that kid's face, repercussion free. If it's two punches, if it's three punches, then we can start talking about punishments or something like that. But if a kid runs up and gives you double bird straight to the face, you are allowed to punch him one time. What do you think about that?
You know, I'm totally fine with it. Now, I saw the – it wasn't really a punch. Like, he just kind of shoved him out of the way, right?
Yeah, I mean, no, he didn't punch him. He just kind of – like, the kid got in his face and it looked like he reacted and pushed him away.
That's why, you know, I'm not necessarily anti-court storm. Like, college kids, have your fun, whatever. But, you know, part of me is kind of anti-court storm because, like, I'll give this – I know how pissed off I get after losing a men's league game. Like, if somebody threw double birds in my face after losing a men's league game, that, like, doesn't matter in this because it's a men's league game, I'd probably, you know, be tempted to punch that guy. These are college kids playing in, like, supercharged atmospheres, and these games mean so much to them. Like, that's why it's so dangerous to have students on the floor with them right after these guys who are, you know, mammoth dudes who lift weights every single day. It's just a dangerous scenario.
Matt Harms literally just lost the one chance that he was going to have to be able to win the outright Big Ten title this season, and a dude runs up and gives him double birds right in the face. I'm just shocked that the only thing he did was push the kid away.
Yeah, like, his restraint there is pretty impressive. So, I'm with you. Like, part of me appreciates the, like, it's fun for kids, it makes memories, but the part of me, the old man, the dad in me, is just like, this is just a little too dangerous.
Yeah, I've stopped fighting that fight because I've accepted the fact that it's not going to go away.
Too angry. Like, I had a tweet this year after K-State Manhattan, I was like, the first place team in the Big 12 is rushing the court. It was just basically like, this is kind of ridiculous. Like, I know these kids have never beat KU, so I get that it's like a huge occasion for them. But, like, they were favored to win the game, and they're in first place in the league. Like, it just, I guess it's I don't want to be like the judge and jury of who can storm the court and who can't. But, like, sometimes we just get a little ridiculous with these court storms. Like, the only thing to me that's a legit, like, court storm or cause for it is, like, a monumental upset or an upset where a kid hits, like, a buzzer beater and it's just a kind of spur of the moment. People are overwhelmed with emotion.
Yeah, I'm with you there. So there's another reason why I think that the player should be allowed to punch a kid that does that, right? That double birds him in the face or talks to him. And this is actually
Light
serious.
Rob, you should never punch anybody in the face. Let's get there. But I'm with you. Like, it's justified in a way.
But yeah, you should never punch somebody in the face. But you need, like, everybody needs to learn. Everybody has that one moment in the time where they learn that you can't just go out and double bird people in the face because you might get punched in the face. And, like, so I'll give you an example. I learned this the hard way, and I don't know if I've ever told this story on the pod, but when I was a junior in high school, we were playing on the road against a team that had a kid. I don't want to say his name because, he's kind of moved on, and I don't want to drag him into any of that mess. But he ended up playing at a school that is top 15 in the country right now, and he averaged like 24 points a game by the time he was a senior. He was a really, really good player. And I played AAU with him for a little bit, so I knew him a little bit. I thought I knew him enough to kind of like run my mouth a little bit. And at halftime of the JV game, there was a ball rack in the middle of the floor, and there was one ball left, and he went over there, and he grabbed it out as I was going over there. And I said something smart, and he said something smart back, and then I said something even dumber, and I kind of turned around, and then I heard him go, "Yo, Rob," and I turned back around, and boom, open hand slap right across the face in front of like 1,000 people that were in the crowd at half court with no games going on, nothing. Everybody saw it happen. And my point is that I deserve that. And that was when I learned that I can't go out and say whatever I want to whoever I want without any repercussion. And I think at some point in everybody's life, they have to learn that you can't go out and do whatever you want or say whatever you want to whoever you want without any kind of repercussion. And that's what that kid needs to learn. Because right now he thinks he can go throw double birds in the face of a 7'3" dude and without repercussion. But what if he did that in any other situation, you put double birds in someone's face, you're probably getting hit. And people need to learn that lesson. It was a good lesson for me to learn. You know, it hasn't stopped me from talking too much shit every once in a while, but it was, I know now that there is a limit and there might be something that comes back. And that was something I needed to learn when I was 16 years old. So, I know you're a dad. I know you have kids. So is that a good lesson that I can teach people?
Hold on. So the amount of shit you talk now is with a filter?
Yes. It's dialed back a little bit.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you on the lesson. Like, you just can't be done.
Yes. All right. So last thing, CJ, and then we're gonna get out of here. I want to talk to you. It's obviously conference tournament week. I love championship week almost as much as I love the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. And I just want like your favorite memories from random March tournaments. It could be like a Big 12 conference tournament. It could be like a Summit League tournament. Like, just what are your favorite moments that maybe people don't always remember? You know, obviously we got like the Bryce Drew shot and all that kind of stuff. But like, what are the moments for you that really stand out in this championship week?
The Big 12, because I grew up with the Big 8, Big 12 tournament. Those ones stick out the most. Probably the most, you know, the coolest game from those years might be the when Kansas beat Texas, and I believe in overtime of the year Durant was around. That was a fun one. I think that was the first time one of the first time Chalmers hit the chop shot. So that one was pretty cool. I'm working on a story right now for something we're doing at the Athletic on Ali Frugmanesh. Mm-hmm. And obviously he had his March moment. But if you go back a year before that, they made the NCAA tournament for the first time under Ben Jacobson in a game that went to overtime against Illinois State. And he hit two huge threes in that overtime and basically, like, hit the one. Then a couple plays later, talking to Ben Jacobson during a free throw, and he's like, hey, what should we run, Ollie? Ollie's like, hey, let's run that same play. I get that same shot. They ran it. He hit it again. I think the Valley tournament, it's probably something that I need to get to at some point in my life and see in person, because I think that's one of the great, probably one of the best conference tournaments there is around. Arch Madness is pretty cool. So I've watched a lot of those Missouri Valley tournaments on TV through my life. But, man, that's one I need to get to, I think, at some point through the years.
Yeah, okay. So I have a couple. One is, like, the first one that I remember is the Ray Allen floater that he hit when UConn won their first Big East national title in 1996. It was Ray Allen against Allen Iverson. Obviously, people know this. I grew up a UConn fan. I was 11 years old at the time, and as far as I was concerned, that was the greatest moment in the history of the planet when that shot went in.
Wasn't the six overtime game in the Big East tournament too?
Yeah, I was there. And, like, honestly, that was that game. It went to six overtimes. But it was, like, not a good basketball game for, like, the last, you know, after Eric Diefendorf hit that ridiculous shot that got waved off, it was not good basketball. Like, I remember just sitting there being like, this is insane. It's six overtimes. But, like, can we just end the game? It's 1:42 in the morning. I'm already not going to be able to get my train back home. I'm going to have to write something insane about this. There's no reason for this game to still be going.
Was that balling as a habit days?
That was balling as a habit days, man. How about this? This is true. I was live blogging that game from a BlackBerry on a blogger on a Blogspot site. That's where I was at that point in time during that game. The grind, man, the grind. So there's I love the Peter Hooley shot. I don't know if you remember this, but he plays for Albany, and he hit like this ridiculous buzzer beater game winner to send Albany to the tournament the same year that like he had left to go home back to Australia after his mother died. I think she passed away from cancer. That was a pretty special moment. But the one that like always sticks out in my mind is Anthony Johnson. I don't know how many people are going to remember this. Anthony Johnson from Montana put 42 on Weber State in the 2010 Big Sky title game, and I just remember watching that being like, yo, this Anthony Johnson dude is sick. And then we never heard from him again. I don't think he ever played professional basketball. I have no idea what happened to him, but he had those 42 points on Weber State in the Big Sky title game, got to the NCAA tournament, and I'm always going to remember him for that. And I love that March gives us those moments where we just have these random memories of guys we have no business knowing who they are, and it's never going to leave. I'm always going to remember Anthony Johnson putting up 42 on Weber State.
I think a good recent one is I think a lot of the world got introduced to the Dominator during a couple of years ago during the Summit Conference Tournament. Didn't he have a game where he just went nuts? In either the semis or the championship game.
It's wild, man. Like, he has – so how about this? South Dakota State has won the last three Summit League automatic bids, and in each one of those games, Mike Dom won the Summit League tournament MVP. So if he can do it again, if they win again, he's probably going to be the MVP again, which would mean he's 4-for-4 on getting to the tournament and 4-for-4 on Summit League tournament MVPs. I don't think that's ever been done before.
We should have, like, two or three teams that college basketball writers, fans, whatever, get a pick on Selection Sunday. Because, like, the bubble sucks so much this year. But, like, let's say South Dakota State loses in the conference tournament. Like, how depressing is it going to be not to have Mike Dom as a senior in the NCAA tournament?
Why would you be depressed? We're going to get 15 of 14 Indiana in the big dance. That's what matters, right?
Yeah, so we need, like, two or three spots that college basketball Twitter, college basketball writers, whatever, they get to pick those teams. And I'm nominating South Dakota State as one of those teams if for some reason they don't win their conference tournament. We got to have Mike Dom in the NCAA tournament. Just like another example, Murray State. Let's go ahead and have John Morant in the NCAA tournament. So are you with me, Rob? Like,
yeah, I got one more name for you. We need one more added to that list. Chris Clemens at Campbell.
I knew you were going to go there. Yeah, for sure. Let's see that kid in the NCAA tournament. Let's make it happen.
The only reason I went with Chris Clemens and not with Fletcher McGee from Wofford, because Wofford is in no matter what. But I mean, you know this, CJ. Fletcher McGee might be my favorite player in the history of basketball. Have you had a chance to watch Wofford at all, see the shots that dude takes?
I saw Wofford live. They came to Al Fieldhouse.
The shots that he puts up are just absolutely ridiculous. Like, he will catch, coming off a screen, off of a curl, he will catch. Feet facing the wrong way, like his back to the basket, and elevate and turn in the air and get up like a 26-footer with a hand in his face, fading away, and it's just buckets, man. It's nothing but net. I love watching that dude play.
Okay, you need to – have you seen him live yet?
I have not, man. It's the biggest regret of my life.
I don't know how you can pull this off. Where is their conference tournament?
It is Asheville.
You need to just get in the car, because he is like your long lost brother, like your basketball soulmate, right?
He really is. So, man. I'm gonna name my next son Fletcher.
Fletcher, there you go. You need to get in the car. You need to go watch them, because here's what I will never forget about watching Wofford, because I knew Fletcher McGee was like really, really good, great shooter. I like to watch guys in warm-up sometimes. And so I watched him in warm-ups that day. And, like, basically every shot he was taking in warm-ups was, like, feet facing the wrong way. Catching and shooting, like, with his feet facing the basket on the other direction. You said it already, the shots he takes in games. But, like, he warms up like that. Just some of the shots he shoots in warm-ups is pretty ridiculous. So he was one guy that's like, it was fun to watch him warm up. And I made it a point to watch him that day.
Yeah, you can't shoot a shot in a game unless you shoot that shot in practice. Isn't that what Patrick Ewing taught us?
There you go.
Well, listen, CJ, I appreciate the time. Hopefully you don't have to stop to get gas or anything. You can make it straight to Manhattan from here. When you get there, I need you to make sure that you give you let Barry Brown and all those guys know that we're pulling for them, and we need to get this dual Big 12 title. I think that's what we need, and we need them to get to the Big 12 title game, because what the world needs, the only thing that can solve the world's problems, is Texas Tech, Kansas State, and the Big 12 title game. You need to make that happen.
All right, I'll let it know. I'm doing a Barry Brown story that hopefully is coming out Friday. So should be a fun one. A little something, speaking of guys that have crazy pregame rituals, Barry Brown does some pretty wild things. So, that one's going to be kind of fun. I'm going to try to have some fun with that story. And it comes out Friday, shameless plug.
Well, that's a nice little tease right there, man. So I'll definitely check it out. All you guys listening, you better check it out. Go follow him on Twitter at CJ Moore Hoop. CJ, I appreciate the time. I'm glad you didn't get in an accident.
Okay, buddy.
Thanks for listening. Follow me on Twitter.
Give me 5 stars.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.